This is Channel 9. Who are you?
I'm fine. Who are you?
Who are you?
Sorry.
Okay, let's do it. This is Channel 9. So who are you?
Hi, I'm Ram Kumar. I'm an application developer working for Microsoft IT. I basically develop applications for non-corporate affairs development of Microsoft.
Okay.
I basically develop applications on .NET. And I'm involved with SQL Server 2500. I also built applications using InfoPath, SharePoint, and to the level I used MS Build. Now I'm going to talk about InfoPath.
Okay.
InfoPath 2003, which is a new application that we released along with Microsoft Office family in 2003. InfoPath 2003 is basically a form which actually helps us to gather information effectively, flexible. Using a dynamic rich forms. Since the creation of these forms are very easy, even the business users can create their own forms and collect the information and share it across different business. Since InfoPath integrates with web services and SharePoint, they can publish their information into the SharePoint since the business users are well versed with SharePoint in a way. As I already said, InfoPath is very easy to create. There are three options you can create InfoPath forms. You can create InfoPath forms based on a schema, or you can create InfoPath forms based on an XML well-formed XML which you have, or just by opening a form editor and creating a new form without knowing anything about XML schema. So the normal business users will actually go and use InfoPath without knowing anything. InfoPath allows us to accept or retrieve information from web service, from a SQL Server database, from an XML document, or from a SharePoint document library. Similarly, InfoPath also enables us to submit or send information to the web services or to SharePoint document library or to anybody's email. This is one of the widest features which is used across, and that's the reason why InfoPath is very successful within the business users when compared to developers. From the developer side, you can create InfoPath forms. You can create InfoPath forms in Forms Editor, in InfoPath Form Editor, as similar to Microsoft Front Page, where you can just drag and drop your text box, list box. You also have a variety of controls in InfoPath. They are called data fields. They don't basically alter the InfoPath XML structure. What it will do is it will just create a text box or list box, whatever you want, and maps it to its particular XML field on the back and behind the screens. There are some controls called structure controls, where, for example, such as tables. Tables will actually alter your XML structure. You can add or remove tables. For example, if you want to add a list of student names in a form, by default, you will just give a single row table. But I can go ahead and add multiple rows to accommodate all my student list. In addition to this, there are something called miscellaneous controls, which is like giving a link, hyperlink to some other web page, or sending a mail in the forms. Some of the key features of InfoPath form. InfoPath form is, as I told, you can actually submit a document to a SharePoint document library. So the business user will basically open the form which is already published in a SharePoint document library and fills out the necessary information and just submit it to the SharePoint library or send a mail. They'll send a mail and the person at the receiving end will receive the form as an email attachment. He just need to open the form again, and the form will open in InfoPath, and he needs to fill in the information. Whatever he is asked for, he can just send it back to the same person or to the different persons. In my application, where I work, it's basically a workflow application. And we used InfoPath extensively as a data collection form. our business users creates their own InfoPort form. They don't interact with us. They just create the InfoPort form and then interact with our workflow engine.
So you said you are creating InfoPort business users creates InfoPort form. But basically, how you validate that data sent by the out of box? So how you validate the business users form?
Well, yeah. As I said, we don't need to write any JavaScript or any specific code to validate the form. InfoPort itself has a wizard type of data validation schemes. InfoPort by definition, since I said it will actually work based on a schema. It validates the data immediately. You can also add your own validation by just setting up rules for every controls. You don't write any code for that. You can just go to the particular controls and just it has a property and just add your rules and validate what sort of data user can enter, what sort of data user cannot enter, and all those things. And this way you can validate it. And if the business users are well, or if you want to write anything extra, you can just go over and add script to it. You can attach a JavaScript, you can attach a C# code, it's a code behind, and it will execute it. Okay, so you don't need to basically, you have all these three options to validate your data, which is entered by the users.
I'm just interested in the C# code block which you were talking about. Is it when you install Visual Studio.net, it will come with the InfoPort development kit, or do we need to do anything extra?
You need to basically install the InfoPort SDK kit, which contains a separate project called InfoPort project for InfoPort. You just need to add the form to the project, and you just need to write a code as you create the normal code. And InfoPort by itself, when you submit it, you have to tell the InfoPort that instead of just call me this block of code which I wrote it in this space. So InfoPort will actually pick it up and get it. I'm sure I'll have some demo, but if I don't have, I'll get it later.
So you talked about the dynamic forms and rich data forms. So how it differs from a normal traditional web pages which using ASP or ASP.NET, you create a dynamic forms. And how the InfoPort, is there any you can correlate and give some kind of key features, how the InfoPort differentiates from ASP.NET?
Sure. Since I said InfoPort, the data of the InfoPort is basically an XML document. You have a single XML document. You can render the XML document in n multiple ways. You can actually create a new views in InfoPort form. So you can actually, the view is nothing but an XSL, by which you can actually render your XML. So when you render XML text, you will actually get an HTML page. So this is one of the best way. I would say InfoPort is one of the best way to create XSL files. If you have an XML and if you want to render it to an HTML page and you don't know how to create an XSL, just the one stop is open InfoPort, just add the XML to it and just design your page how you want. It will give you an XSL and just use the XSL in the web page. So have multiple views. And these views are created by the business users. They can just go and change it at any time. You don't write any HTML code. It is going to create its own XSL internally. You're just going to drag and drop what are the fields you want, how do you want to look. In a way, InfoPort is what you see is what you get. When you design the form, what do you design in the form, that's what the customer is going to see. So that's our advantage in InfoPort as I see. And I just, InfoPort also allows us to do an offline editing, whereas web form does not allow us. What does it mean is, suppose if I got a request to fill up something else, or I need to fill up some information, I have partial information. I'm sure that I'll get the information tomorrow. So what I'll do is I'll just enter partial information and I'll save that form in my local hard disk. Tomorrow I'll come back and fill up all the information, then I just send it back. You cannot do it using web forms. Since it's a website, so you have to fill it full, or you cannot do anything. You have to come back and fill it everything. And InfoPort also supports automatic saving. Suppose you have very very huge forms which has 200 fields, and you are at the end of 15 fields. So you can set the InfoPort to basically save at particular level. So for example, save it for every 3 minutes. So it will actually save the information you entered in your local machine. So even when power goes, when you open the form again, you will have the old information. So you can just update it back to the servers.
So basically coming back to InfoPort, we have a notion of InfoPath and from Office system, InfoPath is evolving as a lightweight user interface to collect data from customers without very less interaction from the development team or any project engineering team. So what do you think about it? It's like it's going to be benefit for a business, or it's going to be benefit for a customers for a rapid change in the business requirements?
The answer lies in your last part of the question. Since the customer wants to change the interface whenever they want to add anything extra, whenever they want to change it the way they want to look at it, they can just go ahead and change it. They can just change it immediately. You don't need to have a developer or a highly technical person to change it. As I said, what you see is what you get. If you just go and change the design, you will get the final output. So I see a lot of value adds to the business where they can modify the forms and just republish it, and the business and the customer will get the updated forms. You basically don't need to come to the development cycle at all.
So when I compare the web pages and the InfoPath again, web pages have the restrictions to access the local file system. And how about in InfoPath? Is InfoPath is kind of, I can go and do my local stuff like reading, writing, all those things, or still InfoPath have its own? Because it's published in a web, as you said, like it's I can publish in SharePoint, I can users can access it. So if you allow to do that, then I think they can just manipulate it.
This is same as web page. Even when the InfoPath form transmitted over to the client's page, it still have restrictions about the client's accessing the client machine. You cannot go and access the registry from InfoPath. You need to have a proper permission registered under the client's machine. All the security goes as, like, since it's coming out of the HTTP, so it's same as. There are some kind of security mechanisms which I want to tell you. You can actually sign the InfoPath form using digital signatures. And you can restrict, only few people can open it, only few people can edit it. This way you can at least control the form being accessed or being edited by everyone. And I'll just give you some of the tips which I came across while I was developing InfoPath forms earlier. Never have a validation on the date picker control itself. The reason is, you always have a validation when you do a submit. The reason is, so for example, if you have a validation on a date picker control, say that your date should never exceed on 10-10-2004 or 2005, and the customer opens the form after the 10-10, so he cannot submit the form because the date is already passed. So he need to change the date. If you actually validate it when the user submits it, at the time of submission that validation is very valid. But once it's submitted, then that particular validation is not required. So if you write any rules on the control, then that's basically going to execute it every time when you open the form. So better write the validation which you want at the page level, means at the form submit or at the rules level. Second thing is, it's a very strange. InfoPath does not allow you to enter A space space blank space B blank space C in a single line text box. When you just enter these A double space B double space C and when you just tab out of the particular text box control, you will see the data A blank space B blank space. It will actually trim out multiple blank space and it will put one blank space. The reason is InfoPath normalize your spaces for the storage. If you really want this feature, you have to go and make your text box to accept paragraph breaks, which is a multi-line text box.
So can we, as it like it's a form, I can collect data. So or is there any restriction like the volume of data I can submit through InfoPath to a particular server, as you said, like web services or a SharePoint? So like I'm just attaching like 10 MB file or 20 MB files to InfoPath, like I'm attaching to my web pages. So is there any restrictions or InfoPath, or it's a best practices or tips you have?
Well, basically there are no restrictions on the InfoPath side. I'll add up. There is a control called file up. There is a control called file attachment. Using that control, you can attach files from your local system and submit it to the web service or SharePoint or through the email. There is no restriction about what the size of the file, but there are some restrictions on type of files you being uploaded. Because InfoPath will actually take the file and it's actually convert the file to a string in Base64 format and embed in the XML file. You cannot actually upload a CHM file or a command file or a DLL, which are normal because a malicious user can enter an exe or upload an exe file and screw up our system. So there are restrictions only for type of files and not for file size. All the file size basically depends on, suppose if you're sending an email, you cannot basically attach like 200 MB document. It will obviously fail at the receiving end. So it's better to have a lesser size attachment. If you want to have, you can basically put it in a file share and attach, put the path in this so that anybody can access the particular share. It's just an add-on, but there is no best practice even to say that we don't have any. And that's all I have with me about InfoPath. I am sure I'll be back and give you some demo later.
That's great. So that was really nice knowing about InfoPath and you sharing some really interesting tips.
Sure.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And
sure.
Hope to get back to you with some more
sure.
demos or something. You know.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Hi guys. So what is this game you're playing?
It's a carom. It's a well-known play.
Carom.
Yeah.
So can you tell
it's
me more about this game?
So it's we're just relaxing now from a big leaf.
Okay.
And before that, I just like to introduce myself. I'm Suresh.
Hi, Suresh.
And I work as application developer in Microsoft IT.
Okay.
And I just like to introduce one of my peer come my game mate.
Hey. I'm Ram.
Hi Ram, we know you.
Yeah, I'm also an application developer, works for Microsoft IT. And now I'm playing a very very famous indoor game. We have it in office, so it's very cool to play in office itself.
That's great. So how do you guys play this?
Sorry?
How do you guys play this game? Tell me more.
Okay, Carom is basically, it's a two to four player game. And you basically have, you have like similar to chess, you have like white and black coins, and we have a common red coins. You basically need to, one team will actually take up the white, one team will take up the black. And you basically have to get the opponent team not to put the coins, or you put all your coins and win a game.
Okay. So, whose move is it now?
I'm done, I already got my coins.
You got a straight rocket, so he's lucky.
White.
Good. Let's talk about. I want to share something about MS Build. It's basically what's MS Build? It's basically It's basically MS Build is a build engine that has come along with WinB timeframe in .NET 2.0. What does MS Build does? It basically builds your Visual Studio projects and other projects, and it also helps you to deploy it in various servers. And we are basically working on MS Build for the past 2-3 months, and we are really enjoying working with MS Build. It basically, we are actually getting more smiles from our testers. The reason I'm saying is the developer will just build, develop the code. Develop and the testers will just test it. But we are also spending some time to build my application currently by manual, like just going, opening my all the projects, building it, and sending it to testers, and testers will install it in their test servers manually. We don't have any automation. We came up with, we actually heard about MS Build, which basically helps us to build my task, build my application, and also helps testers to deploy the applications with just a single click. You basically don't need to worry about spending like 7 to 8 hours, 7 to 8 hours to build and deploy to any servers. We spend like 2 to 3 days to build the script, and finally we just end up in spending only 30 to 40 minutes to just build and deploy it in various servers which we have.
So this is like, as I said, like I'm getting smile because every time I walk in this space, I just looked at my carom and I said that when I'm going to play it, right? So I got the answer when MS Build was released, and I was happy saying that MS Build is a way to make me happy when playing this character. Right? You might ask like, what is the funny guy you are talking about? What does MS Build and Karam do with it? It's not like that. Every day typically it's like we have a release tomorrow. So basically we work by 6, we have to deliver a end code complete to the test. So the test will start testing the applications. So if it's a small app, just fine. But if just involves more than a server or like 2-3 servers, it's just pain to deploy all the applications in different servers and looking at the configuration, and you face a lot of environmental issues in the end of the day. So you might like, you know, you'll sit like some 8 to 2-3 hours more. So what MS Build do to this? So as I said, like MS Build is an engine which comes with 2.0.NET 2.0 framework, where it's just a lightweight engine which does a lot of automated stuff, but it's not everything is out of box. So you have to build whatever you want. You create your own libraries to do the deployment. Let's say like I want to copy a file, you just create a library which do a copy file. Then finally, it's just a declarative statement in XML saying that you specify copy and specify what is the source and what is the destination. And everything will be done by the build engine. So what you're going to build engine is, you're just giving an XML data. It's an XML file. You just define your XML file, what kind of servers involved in this, which application should deploy in which server, and which file should be copied to some kind of file share, and you want to build a database. Just give a scripts, and the build engine has the capability to deploy your SQL scripts in the database. Anywhere, it's not the local server. You can run from any machine onto any remote servers. So I can deploy an app to any remote servers without logging into the particular machine or just terminal servers or remote desktops into the servers. So what I will do, just we spend like, as we both spend like, you know, 3-4 days to build the scripts. Based on our project requirements and the deployment requirements. Once it is done, and we have to create with scripts for a development environment, we can create scripts for test environment, and we can create for production environment. So basically this goes with the parameters. So it's nothing to do with like I have to create multiple scripts, it's just a single script, and maybe the server names will vary for different environments. So I will just change the environments in my XML files. So I will just give the command prompt just some kind of parameter saying that this build is a dev build, this is a test build, this is a production build. That's it. And I'll just run a single command prompt, just click enter, boom, it's done. Within 30 minutes you'll get a mail saying that, hey, the build is success, and it sends mails to all the respective people who is involved in this testing, or somebody who is really interested and knows whether the particular date or milestones are met, whether this release is up now or if there is any delay. So my managers also will be very keen in getting some mail saying that, okay, whether we are on date or we are some skipping or some lack of skips in the dates or something to be taken care of. So that's why if you see, I am just done, my everything is success, now I am playing my character.
That's great.
So happy.
That's
and great. My testers also so happy because they don't want to stay late.
So MS Build is a big part of the SDLC,
yeah,
basically.
Okay. It's big part. Actually, you have to be. Every application, once you develop, it has to go to a deployment, a rollout, or a production, or a testing. Or for dev also, we have to do some kind of pre-testing before it goes to testing. So we need to set up all the environments. But I have a raw code, but I don't have an environment. What I will do? I don't want to spend 3 days setting up these environments every future complete. So I will just create my own setup at beginning based on my requirements. Finally, I just shoot a single command which will do all my job. And I just, next day morning I come and just happily test the applications and log the bugs and fix the bugs.
So does a RTM product also ship this way?
Yep.
Okay.
So currently 2.0 framework is available for a CTP releases, and beta 2 also available. So the MS Build is shipping with that as of now. So the enhancements is going to be happen, but currently it supports like almost 50 tasks, inbuilt tasks like deploying SQL, copying file share, deleting files, deploying web services, deploying websites in a remote server, and creating MSIs, creating CAP file, and you can do a lot of stuff which you are doing normally manually using multiple tools.
Okay.
So you might use Visual Studio installer to create MSI. You might be using some third-party tools to create MSI. You might be using some manual, say some instruction, open XML file, go to this node, and change this value to ABCD server to XYZ server. I don't want to worry about anything. I'm going to do everything in XML, and it takes care of modifying that particular value to a particular server based on my parameters. If it is a production, it says production server 1. If it is test, test, it says test server 1. So everything is automated now. I don't need to worry about it. And apart from that, I'm getting emails. I can set emails and I can get log files which is attached to the email, so that I will get a complete view of what happening in the MS Build engine. So it gives like, okay, it's completing web service deployment, it's completing database deployment. So it gives step-by-step process. If anything goes wrong, you will give a picture where it went wrong and what is your next step to proceed. So it gives a complete end-to-end. I hope like it's an extensible kit, and that's the key area where Microsoft is focusing on, saying that it's a .NET based engine. So it supports all the .NET C# code. You can write that libraries to support your extensibilities. So you can write .NET, VB.NET, you can write C#, any .NET supported languages. So you can extend the MS Build engine up to what you want. So currently it supports some limited 50 cells, but you can extend to 100, 200 based on your requirements. Your organization might having a different way of deploying applications, like more than 100, 200, something like that. It supports the extensibility. That's the best part in MS Build.
That's great.
To add to it, Visual Studio 2005, the project file for 2005 is basically an MS Build project. Visual Studio 2005 is using MS Build to compile its code. As he said, MS Build helps us in lot many ways, right from building and deploying. I'll just go ahead in a little deeper about how MS Build does all those things. MS Build is basically an XML file where it has a root node, say the project, says what type of project it is. And MS Build, you have a set of properties defined to basically the properties. These properties are nothing but variables which you will be using while doing a building or a deployment. Similar to the properties, you have something called items. Items are nothing but a collection of values, a collection of files, kind of thing. You also have something called targets, which basically is a group of small tasks. These targets are the one which basically does your main task. There is something called task which basically, for example, the task is compile my C# project, compile or copy my binary files from one location to another location. You can also have there's something called warnings. You can provide a warning message. Suppose you are trying to copy a file, but the file is already, so you can give a warning message that the file is already, I'm going to overwrite it. And you can also get an user input from that, whether you want to continue or not. As I said, MS Build, you can deploy, and whenever there is an error, you can take care of the necessary actions. MS Build, by definition, it does not roll back any of your operations. So we have to write up our own script to roll back our operations. In a way, as he said, we are really in a very good mood to make our application work, building and deployment very successfully by just reducing it to 20-30 minutes. Earlier, my build and deployment documentation runs to 70 pages, and now it just runs to one page.
Wow.
Because all I said in my 70 page is basically which we wrote in two to three days in the XML. So it does all our tasks. As you can actually, currently we are expecting to add more tasks in the WIDB time frame, which will release in November. But it doesn't stop you from writing your own task and then use the task in the MS Build.
And I want to share my very good experience where I was previously working with before MS Build has been released. I was just keen in saying that why can't we automate our build process? Why can't we automate building our application and deploying the servers? So I was just very happy using Visual Source Safe as my source control and just write some VP 6.0 cool stuffs behind it, saying, you know, connecting, get files, get latest files from SourceSafe, and just put together in a file share and call some different tools using command prompts and face a lot of and break my head on my carom, everything. So whatever I did, finally I get, but I'm not satisfied. I'm not satisfied, but it works. But I put a lot of stuff, but it didn't make me very good, feel happy about what I did. So currently what MS Build is just everything. So it gives a getting, it has an inbuilt capability of getting SourceF, files from SourceF, various source controls. If you have a third party source control, don't worry. Use your extensible kit, implement the function there, and connect with your source control, get the latest files. There's no nothing wrong. So definitely it's extensible, you can do with anything. So you don't need to worry about whether MS Build can work with third party, some different source controls, different databases. Don't worry about anything. It's our extensible. Just implement the interface and just write your own custom code there. You are done. You are completed. So when I compare what is missing in the previous VS managed build, which is shipped with .NET, we can build the application there. But only thing is you cannot customize, you cannot extend, and you need Visual Studio .NET installed on that particular machine. So it's kind of not managing the particular big IDE or whatever the tools to just build the application. It's going to be a really big question. So if you think about MS Build is very smart, thin, and it's extensible, built on .NET framework, and you don't need to be installed Visual Studio .NET on a build machine. It just needs 2.0 framework installed. Just, you know, like maybe maximum 50 MB of file you need to download and install 2.0 framework. That's it. And it's just a command prompt. And if you are a very cool guy of creating some, you know, cool stuff in UI, just create a .NET 2.0 WinForms with, you know, a lot of graphics around it, and say that, hey, just select what is the parameter for this build, and say that what is my inputs to the build, if you know the XML builds, and just click build it. That's it. And you can show it to my manager, say that, wow, I created a UI, and you don't need to go to the command prompt. I'm giving a good user interface to you. I think I'm going to suggest this to VP team, say that, hey, you can take my user interface to build this. So
that's
I love it. I love it.
But Suresh, do you know that Ram here has stolen 5 of your moves?
Yeah.
So you should be playing 5 more times.
Yeah. He's wasting a lot of time.
While you've been chatting with me, he's been stealing your moves. So he's actually had 5 extra moves.
Yeah, that's why I think he took advantage of my MS Build passion. I think that's the way we work each other. You take advantage of what you have and just work,
share
the knowledge and just no, just don't wait for anything. Just use the time and just complete the work. So he just did it. I think you take this time. I will do this.
I just want to tell you one thing. Developers, go now and try and convert all your documentation running from more than one page to n page to one page by just building your MS Build script. It's going to make smiles to your testers. It's going to reduce your stress when you deliver it well, and install it in n number of servers. Here it's just like single, just like you type and enter, and it's going to install it in n number of servers. And second thing is what I want to tell you is earlier my tester used to ask me, Ram, when is the drop? Give it in the morning so that we can install before you go for the day and come back in the morning for testing. But now after they give an MS Build, they never ask me, and this I got amazing. This is great, excellent, fast. It's cool.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So thanks guys for sharing information about MS Build. Thanks, and you can carry on your game.
Sure. Yeah, I have to because thanks. I installed already my like 6 times.
6 times. Hi, this is Channel 9. Who are you?
I'm Ram. I'm a program manager with the Emboss team. I'm working on office business applications.
Okay, that's great. So what does this Emboss team do?
We have two groups, basically into one in IDC, with business applications as well as the office of solutions. We manage solutions which are going to have interaction between business solutions or business applications and our office, MS Office. MS Office applications are primarily like Outlook, Word, and all. So how do we integrate and expose the back-end data or business applications data onto this front-end? So the idea is to integrate and give better flexibility and do better things in a shorter time. Say, for instance, we have a product which we are working on to integrate some of our office applications to, particularly the Outlook, to the backend called SAP. SAP has its an ERP solutions
package. Right.
So the idea is to be able to do certain things which are done in two places, like for instance Outlook. I create a meeting request, and then that also the same information has to be percolated to SAP. Normally it's done in a manual way. Create a meeting request in Outlook, that's separate, and working with the SAP is separate. Now we want to integrate this so that the moment I create an meeting request in Outlook, automatically that gets added to my project in the backend. So all the charging, everything happens automatically. So if I change the timing to say point to another, the same meeting time, I say I want to now use it for some other project work. So that project will get charged for that time. So this is one time management example. Another example could be Lee request. Say for instance I want to create Lee request. I go to Outlook and say, okay, this is my time I want to be off. So automatically a message would go to my supervisor or my manager. My manager would get a request and he sees, okay, this time is he wants request for a leave. So he will look at his resources, how it's organized, and then he can approve or reject. So this will automatically get reflected on the back end, his decisions, as well as how it gets reflected on my Outlook calendar. So this is another example of that. Then, for instance, another third application which we are looking at targeting is the budget monitoring, in which I say, as an individual contributor or a manager, I set targets for myself. So when my budget hits this, I want to get alerted. So the backend would automatically send alerts to me telling that, okay, your budget has reached this limit, so you should try to work and figure out a way to manage that. So these are some of the applications which we are working on right now, and it's pretty exciting to be the forerunner for this technology.
That sounds good. So just a question, is this, are these applications all independent and they work in conjunction with Outlook, or are they like plugins?
Yeah, that's it's a technology we are trying to use. That technology is called Information Bridge Framework. We built it last year and it is in the market. But what we have done is we are making little bit modifications so that the applications which SAP and Microsoft are going to develop is based on this platform called Information Bridge Framework. So these are going to be kind of plugins only. It's all metadata driven, meaning any application can be added or removed by at the enterprise level. That means enterprise doesn't need org management application. So he can just, I mean, the admin can just remove that application. So it's all going to be metadata driven, meaning the metadata will tell what application is available for an individual.
Okay, so I think it works, it'll work great in conjunction with the XML formats.
Yeah, XML is...
I think it must be the core essence of...
XML is being used as one of the key things. But
for the metadata
passing. Yeah, for metadata definition, yes.
That's great. So can we expect this as a part of Office 12, or are these going to be independent applications targeted towards enterprises? Or
to answer that, I would say we should go to the SAP or Mendocino site in Microsoft, because what we are targeting currently is, with Office 11 itself, we should be able to do some things. But Office 12 is probably coming a little later, so our published dates are there on the website, so you should be able to see that.
That's great. So what is the website users should log on to?
I can just let you know that. Just a moment. It is... just hold on.
Sure. So Ram, what is the URL users should log on to find out more about Mendocino?
It is http://www.microsoft.com. WAC Office, WAC SAP, this is the one, default, this is the, you can go here for all Microsoft, people, they should be able to access this, even outsiders also.
That's great. So, it's great meeting you here, Ram. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Hello. Hi, this is Channel 9. Who are you?
How's it going?
Doing great. It's going great.
I'm Parmesh.
Hello, Parmesh. So what do you do at Microsoft?
I run the developer tools group.
Wow.
Lot of fun.
Okay.
So, in case you're wondering what we do, we have deliverables into Visual Studio, primarily. So we're building parts of the next generation of the end-to-end software development lifecycle tools called Visual Studio Team System.
Okay.
We currently have taken ownership of Visual Studio for devices, and we are also building tools for Java migration, as in if you're a developer or if you have applications that are currently written on Java, how do you migrate into .NET?
That's great.
We're providing tools, tips, technologies, white papers, samples, the whole nine yards.
Hi, this is Channel 9. Who are you?
I'm Parmesh.
Hello, Parmesh. What do you do at Microsoft?
Well, other than being a big fan of baseball.
Wow.
And of course, cricket. I run the developer tools group here at the IDC.
That's great. So, tell me more about your role here.
This is a gift, by the way, that I got from my team for completing 15 years at Microsoft last year.
15 years?
Yeah, I completed 15 years in 2004.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yep, I had a ton of fun, and I used to work in Redmond for the first 12 years.
Okay.
And for the last 4 years, I've been in India, Hyderabad. And I run the developer tools group. I think I'm being repetitive here. We have several projects going on right now. We are part of Visual Studio. The primary deliverables are into Visual Studio. And we are part of the team that does the next generation of software end-to-end lifecycle development tools, otherwise known as Visual Studio Team System. We are doing parts of the server components, and we have taken ownership of Visual Studio for devices. We are also building tools and technologies for migrating Java developers and Java applications to .NET. So we go the whole nine yards there to help developers and applications in terms of white papers, guidances, samples, tools, everything. I have a team of close to about 100 people.
Okay.
I don't know where else I would be. Microsoft is a really cool place.
That's great. So how was it working at Redmond, and how is it working here? What do you prefer, really?
Honestly, I don't think there is a preference. The reasons I moved back to India are primarily personal. And the one really good thing that I've noticed after coming to India is, you know, we've pretty much brought the entire Microsoft culture from there to here. It's not exactly the same. There are differences. But you know, once you walk into this building, you can't tell the difference whether you're in Redmond or here.
Yeah, that's true. This is a fantastic campus here.
Absolutely, no doubts about that. And, you know, we take great pride about that fact, too.
Yep. So you mentioned about VSD,
yes.
Visual Studio for Devices. I think a lot of people are excited about that. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I can tell you more about all the projects. I'm excited about all the projects that we're working on. We are also working on yet another project for sending SMSs from desktop and stuff like that. But I don't want to get into any details around that. As far as Visual Studio for Devices is concerned, we are building the next generation. We are actually starting planning for the next generation of what a device development is going to be like. And there again, we're planning to take the learnings that we've had from VSTS in terms of developing, or in terms of actually enabling people to build software end-to-end. For example, there's no testing support for handheld device applications. So we're looking at that. We're looking at what it actually means to make line-of-business application development really cool and rich. So there are a whole bunch of things that we're actually nailing right now. Great team that we've actually assembled out of both internal and external people. And I'm super proud of this fact. The other cool thing is Visual Studio for Devices. The unique thing, I'd say, is that it touches a lot of other divisions and groups that we have to work with. For example, we sit on top of the .NET framework. We have to work with the Mobile Developer Experience Group, with the MDPG, the Embedded Developer Group, and stuff like that. So we take input from various groups. Oh, one other really, really important aspect of VSD that I forgot was about the device emulator. I don't know what more a developer could ask for other than developing on their desktop, and even though they may not have a physical device, be actually able to try out their application on their desktop on a device emulator. Super cool.
That's great. I think Sriram was showing me a demo of that yesterday. He'd be demoing us the entire thing today itself.
Yeah, that's something that we are.
He was showing me that you could skin it and everything.
You could
change the skins on the fly.
Yeah, we are actually talking about, you know, adding more peripheral support and stuff like that to it also.
So the look and feel of it would be like, you know, as though you had a real device.
Sounds great.
And we're also working on performance to make sure that, you know, people say, oh, you know what, a real device is a real device, and on it, on an emulator, the performance will be lower or any such thing. That ain't going to happen.
Okay, why do you say that?
We are actually working on performance. So
okay.
Our goal is to actually make sure that the experience of developing on an emulator is identical in terms of performance, features, stability and all this stuff to actually working on a device.
Okay.
Maybe I confused you by saying that we ain't going to do that. I really meant we ain't going to let the device development, the device emulator, fall behind.
Okay, that's good.
So
Paramesh, how has life changed at Microsoft in the last 15 years? How has Microsoft been back then and how is it now? Has it really changed over the times? Has it metamorphosized, changed with the times, become better?
When I joined Microsoft, there were just about 4,000 people in the company. Today we have, 65,000 people. So in that way, yeah, Microsoft has grown. I don't know whether it's a biased comment or not, but the way I feel it today is exactly the way I felt about Microsoft 16 years ago when I joined. It's a company with an enormous amount of energy, enthusiasm, and smartness. And you know, people ask me all the time, you know, what is a typical day at Microsoft like? And my standard response to them is, there is no typical day. That's what makes this life so much exciting. And I spent a good part of my life, that's 13 years old, I started my career working on performance of OS2. And when Microsoft was still developing OS2, and then we moved to the Windows NT team, I was still working on performance. So starting from there, I did a bunch of things, working on Windows performance, and then moved over to working on testing for a while, then became a program manager. So I've done a bunch of different things, and then I came over to India and started a group for developing a feature called the Systems Resource Manager. And then about 3 years ago, I moved into this completely different world of developers, running the developer tools group here. So I have had a ton of learning, a ton of fun. I've met a lot of great, great, absolutely stellar people. In many ways, Microsoft is my life.
That's great. So wish you very good luck for the next 15 years and more.
Thanks, Kaushal.
All the
really
best.
I appreciate it.
Thanks. See you.
Take care.
Hey, who are you?
Hi, I'm Rajesh.
Hi, Rajesh. So what do you do at Microsoft?
I test.
Sorry?
I test.
You test?
Yeah, I get
so
paid
what do you
break,
test?
I get paid to break things.
So you get to test like the Xboxes, break them and test if they are...
Not the Xboxes, we test the internal applications that we build.
Okay.
Primarily we dog food the new technologies.
Okay.
So we have Bitby, Yukon, so these are like Visual Studio 2005.
Right.
And
SQL Server
2005. So we test applications on this.
Okay.
And I primarily take care of the automation part.
Okay.
So it's a fun job.
Okay. So do you actually have some crash test dummies or something?
No. I wish we had. We could relieve our stress. Okay. So I go about automating the testing for this.
Okay.
Because a large part of these suits are repetitive, and in the current scenario, a dev can throw so much complexity at a test, which will keep him busy for 5 days. A dev in one day throws as much complexity on the test, which will keep him busy for 5 days at least. With the cool dev tools that MS is developing, a dev throws up so much of complexity at test. So, automation is the answer, yes, but we are not stopping at that point. Automation is good, but not smart enough. We are looking at something more than that. So, we are currently looking at model-based testing, and we're trying and building a model-based testing framework, which will help us automate, or rather intelligently automate our tests.
Okay.
What model-based testing is like, you have a finite state machine which, each application is like defined in number of the states, and you have rules which actually say which action moves it to what state. Now, the combinatorial explosion that a test is going to face with this, you have say around 5 or 6 actions that can happen, and each drives it to, you can drive it to 5 or 6 different states. Now, combination of all this actually is a very huge number.
Okay.
So, you can ask me the questions.
About general, okay. So, tell me, Rajesh, how is it working at Microsoft? How long have you been here, and what does it take to become a tester at Microsoft?
Okay, tough question. Seriously, I've been in Microsoft for 6 months now. Okay, and how does it feel? Cool. Currently, I'm like a kid in a candy store, having my fill of all the technology. And it's cool, it's fun, basically. You work, you play, you party, and everything is gelled fine. You know, there's no...
It sounds like an ideal life.
Really, it's ideal life. It's
so great. What do you recommend people if they want to become a tester at Microsoft? What kind of stuff should they get their hands dirty with?
Okay. First, learn to code.
Okay,
this I don't know, in Microsoft there's no difference between a dev and a test.
Okay, so you're saying if you want to fix the problem, first learn how to make the problem?
Yes. Unless you know how you can screw it up, you can't fix it. Okay. More than that, jokes apart, typical I've seen that at least here in the companies that I've worked, there's a test kind of says, okay, we are test, we don't need to code.
Right.
But at MS, it's a totally different scene. There's basically just a difference in your a title that you have, that you are a test and he's a dev. Basically, all of you should know how to code. Okay.
Okay.
Learn .NET, C sharp. I would say lots of .NET, lots of C sharp. Be okay. Pretty good at that. Learn basics of testing. What else?
And the most important part?
The most important part. Think out of the box.
Okay.
You need to be extremely creative at MS. You need to be creative. You need to look at problems in a different manner. Look at things for not what they are, but what they can be.
Okay.
Because that's where the problem exists. See, whenever you look at things for what they are, you just see what they are. You don't see what they can be. And a test's main job is to see what they can be, and what they can be if they get bad.
Right.
Yeah, so that's primarily a test job. So don't look at things for what they are, what they can be. .NET, lots of it. C sharp, lots of it. And what else? You know, I never really thought of what it takes to come in MS.
So how did you get here? Tell us your story.
Okay. I'll put a little background here. I did some amount of development in assembly. I did some amount of development in C, C++. It's kind of getting bored doing development. So I moved to test.
Okay.
That's where I found it's more interesting. You get to see different technologies. Like you see different applications, different types. You see different designs. So that actually pulled me into testing, and how I got to MS. It's just one afternoon I got a call that, okay, we have an opening at MS. Would you like to be interviewed?
Wow.
I said, fine. They said, can you come to Pune?
Mm-hmm.
I'm basically from Bombay.
Okay.
I said,
that's great. So am I.
So, they said, can you come to Pune? I said, okay, I can come, but it's kind of too short a notice. They said next day morning.
Okay.
And this was at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay, okay.
So, I said, okay, I'll try and make it. And then after 2 hours, I got a call again. They said, no, we have a slight change in plan. We are coming to Bombay.
Wow.
I said, better. Oh man, it's good.
Talk about eating, having your cake and eating it too.
Then, okay, my current manager, he came to Bombay. So he was the first round of interview. So, man, it was a fun interview, you know, that I never felt I was giving an interview. He just asked me, okay, testing, he asked me a couple of basic questions, then he asked me about automation, and that really, like, it was kind of this thing. And then I just started talking. I told them about the frameworks, how, what happens and all this kind of stuff. So that's it. That lasted for around 1.5 hours. After that, I think 3 days or 4 days afterwards, I get a call. Can you come over to Hyderabad?
Okay.
We have a second round of interview.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's cool. So I came in the morning, and that was like 5 hours of interview.
Okay.
It was grueling. Grueling in the sense for the length of it, but apart from that, it was like fun. One thing what I liked the most was what they tried and evaluated you was for your passion.
Okay.
For the technology.
Mm-hmm.
And second most important thing they looked was the values. MS values.
Right.
Typically, would you fit into the MS value structure? Believe me, not many. I did not look at those values as MS values. I look at them more as generic values, which every
life values.
Yeah, every human being should have those values.
Okay.
It's not very specific to MS. If you are a good human being, you need to have those values because you can't exist without them.
Okay. Okay.
So that's it.
That's fantastic. So that's what it takes to be at Microsoft.
Yes.
Be a good human being.
Yes.
And
be
learn how to code and be creative.
Be creative. Good. Creative is first.
Okay.
Okay, I'll put it. MS values, creative, and code.
Okay.
In that order.
Okay. That's great. Thanks so much. I think this was fantastic meeting you.
Okay.
Okay.